This is Fresh Air. Robert Irwin is an artist whose work is often about perception. He used to be a painter, but he gave up painting and his studio by 1970 and became one of the pioneers of a movement that investigated the nature of light and space. He turned to public artworks, though many of his ideas were too controversial to get past the proposal stage. He's created works for a public park in Dallas, the old post office in Washington, D.C., and the Public Safety Building Plaza in Seattle. He's currently designing the Central Garden for the Getty Museum in Los Angeles. He's one of the most influential California artists, and the Museum of Contemporary Art in L.A. recently organized his first major retrospective, which will soon travel. New Yorker writer Lawrence Weschler devoted a book to Irwin and his work. Weschler describes Irwin as one of the most interestingly and fruitfully contradictory figures on the art scene today. I asked Robert Irwin what he thinks his work is about.
Actually, I would say the probably central element of my whole activity is the quality of questions. I'm kind of a question addict. My whole interest is in positing questions which I think are relevant and then pursuing whatever conclusions they may arrive at.
What kinds of questions do you think your art asks?
Well, I think that art is actually an activity which is not dissimilar to philosophy, in which it asks those rather broad questions as to what is the nature of things? What is the nature of reality? What do we mean by meaning? Things of those sorts. And with a kind of a bias towards the aesthetic, that is an interest in the fact that everything has a potential beauty to it. So perception overlaps that, obviously, in that when I'm making inquiries as to how we see the world and why we see the world the way we do and why do we make the assumptions we do, why do we assign the kind of meanings we do, we get involved with the whole idea of how one perceives the world and the kind of that philosophic question of the fact that we make the world, we form the world, the kind of intentionality that is, I think, central to contemporary philosophy.
Can you give me an example of a specific piece or a specific proposal that you feel illustrates how your art poses such questions?
Well, I think no one single piece does it, but I think if you look at the sort of trajectory of what I've been doing, there's a kind of continuous thread, which is this series of questions which are interlocked. My feeling is that that art, a long time ago, modern art, developed its philosophic ground. That's fairly understandable now. It has developed a conceptual ground, which is, I think, reasonably understood by people. It has, in the last 50 years, developed a vocabulary, a language, a syntax, and we're at a point in time where we're trying to test those ideas, those issues, those philosophies, those concepts in the world to find out whether or not they hold water. What kind of a world do they make? And that's really what I'm trying to do right now. So I'm sort of in this funny, awkward place, halfway in one foot in the art world and one foot in the world of day-to-day actually building things.
Now, I know you gave up your studio in 1970, and you stopped painting before that. Do you remember what your last painting was?
Yeah, sure. There were the disc paintings that I did. There were these circular convex paintings that were painted in a way so that they became a piece and a part of the environment around them. They were no longer objects separated from that environment. I was trying to paint a painting that didn't begin and end at the edge. And when I accomplished that, I was no longer a painter. I had to deal with the space around it and take all that seriously.
When you gave up painting, did you miss the pleasure of paint, the color of paint?
Absolutely. More critically, I missed having what I did not realize. I missed having a very clearly defined thinking form. I mean, that's how I thought about things. That's how I organized things. I used the painting as the kind of crucible in which I put all those things and mixed them around and looked at them and examined them. And when I stopped being a painter and not knowing where I'm going to go, I ran into the problem that I did not know how to think about the things that I did. So the first thing I had to do was spend a couple of years examining just that. How do I essentially posit my own questions? How do I examine my own assumptions and so on and so forth?
You've made a living not only through your art but through teaching. And for a while, I think you made a living betting on horses. What period of your life was that?
Well, first of all, I made a living teaching in a very, very short period of time. I only taught for about 5 or 6 years. I found it an incredibly interesting activity. In fact, it was really a full-time job. It was if I wanted to do what I'm doing, I couldn't also teach. So that was a loss in a way. I rather enjoyed that very much. As an alternative, one of the things that I started, I got involved when gambling essentially when I was 15, and I'm not quite sure why. Maybe the people I was hanging out with, but it became my first real opportunity to think something all the way through. The beauty of, for example, horse racing is that when you find an activity in which the information is infinitely complex, one of the first things you find yourself doing is essentially corrupting it, because it is totally corruptible. You can make it do or appear to be anything you want it to be, which was my first lesson, i.e. in intentionality, that you intend that world. And so the first lesson in gambling is self-control. And that was a big surprise to me, because gambling from the outside looks like a kind of catharsis, a letting loose. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why you can win at gambling, because most of the people who gamble want to lose. The camaraderie, it's much easier, it's more friendlier, a letting go. To win at something, to be disciplined enough to really think something through, is very complex and separates you in a lot of social ways. And so it became my first really good philosophic lesson was learning how to do it. It's like a three-dimensional chess game. And if you really are interested in the quality of the game, you also have to be interested in the quality of how one pursues the game.
I always get scared when people gamble, because for me, gambling always brings to mind B-movies in which the main character gambles away everything and ends up destitute in an alcoholic stupor on Skid Row. And I was wondering, well, didn't you see any of those films? Don't you know this can only end badly?
That's what my mother always thought.
And was she persuasive?
No, not at all. Actually, I found that everyone needs at some time a real strong discipline in their lives, something which allows you to really carefully sort out and value all the different kinds of things that you bring to bear on your decision-making process, and also on how you conduct your own life. Oddly enough, gambling for me was essentially that crucible, that process of disciplining myself. Some people might do it with an instrument, playing a piano and having to practice every single day, or someone might do it, using any kind of tool, like painting as a discipline of sorts. I found gambling actually to be a much more active one.
Artist Robert Irwin is my guest. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is artist Robert Irwin. You grew up in Los Angeles. What visually excited you when you were growing up? What kinds of things?
I had a real great interest in the quality of the way things look. Specifically, I was really interested in automobiles, building, having my first car, painting it, polishing it, working on it, refining the linkage of the carburetor, that sort of thing. So that was my first sort of craft participation. And the second one, I think, was learning how to dance. There was a great interest in what was called jitterbugging or lindying, and I couldn't do it in the beginning at all. I had to spend like a year dancing with a doorknob, sort of learning how to do this thing, which I found ultimately really... I danced every single night and made a living dancing in contests, and that was a real pleasure, and that, I think, probably was my most sensual kind of activity.
Well, that's interesting. With the cars,
curious.
With the cars, did you customize your cars?
Oh, sure. The first car I owned, I had it a year before I was allowed to drive it. I think it's something that people grow up with out here in California, mm-hmm. And a car becomes something more complex than just a piece of transportation. There's especially in those days when a car was more manipulable. I mean, you could make it and build it and change it, and that it was a really your first sort of hands-on aesthetic experience where you made decisions, like I say, about the linkage of the carburetor. That's fundamentally an aesthetic. It's actually, I tried to explain to some people at one time, that I think that's an authentic folk art. We think of folk arts as being Indian blankets and pots and that. Those are now have become historical arts. In this contemporary time, say for a kid growing up in California, an automobile was the utilitarian object that you start out with, and you make it yours. You identify it in all the ways so that it is exactly a kind of representation of how you think you are.
So what's the coolest customized car that you had? What did you do that was really...
Well, I first of all, I was very limited in the amount of monies that I had at that time. My parents were not able to help me out in that, so it was only what I was able to earn. But probably the one I had that I got to the highest level was a 34 five-window coupe, which I got so that it looked pretty good to myself. And a little bit of show, a little bit of go.
When you started getting interested in art, did you get involved in looking at art through the avant-garde of the time or through the older, already acknowledged great works?
Well, my education, as I said earlier, was very poor in that my exposure to the world was minimal out on the West Coast. I think probably my first experience of seeing something that maybe had a real art content was actually seeing Rakubo's Japanese, these very special Japanese wares, these small little tea bowls. And I had never, I did not take any courses in art history, nor did I really go to the museum. My first exposure to contemporary painting, and that was with these other artists that were around me. And then slowly I began to start seeing these other things. At one point I decided that I had a great void there, a great need. So I decided to teach myself something about art history and took over a whole area of the library at UCLA during one summer. And there was nobody there, and laid out the sort of history of art in pictures on tables, and then walked up and down. Rather than reading about it or looking at it in terms of text, I looked at it visually and walked up and down these things for like literally 3 months. And then went off to Europe and looked at the things firsthand. Went to, you know, Spain and Italy and France, and spent a lot of time in the museums. And then had a kind of moment where in the Louvre, I was walking through and looking at all these paintings and examining them, and they had an unusual exhibition of a pointillist painting there at that particular moment. And I was standing in a room full of 18th century work and looked into this other room of this pointillist thing, and suddenly that other room was totally alive. And I realized I had, while all that 18th century, 17th, all that was very interesting, that's not where my heart was. So I went into that pointillist room and realized I somehow was a part of the modern world.
You sound very, very methodical, even in your approach to art.
Well, I guess I do have a kind of methodical. I don't think of myself being that way, but I've learned how to think something from the beginning and slowly develop it all the way through, which I think maybe is my one of my best strengths.
Do you go to museums anymore?
Oh yeah, sure, but not in the sense of being methodical. I go and give my eye a holiday, have fun, just look at stuff and don't get critical about it, just look at it. And the things that please me, I look at a long time, and the things that don't, I don't pay much attention to.
I'd like to go back to some of your early passions, customized cars and dance. Do you still dance? If so, what kind of dances do you do, and what kind of car do you drive now?
Well, the thread is not very is pretty thin now. I don't dance much right now. The only dance that I really learned how to do was I was like a contest jitterbug dancer, which had this element in it, which is called a shoulder twist, which allows you to kind of develop a kind of counterpoint with your partner that gives you almost the feeling that you're going to fly, that you're going to literally almost come off the ground. And when you're doing it, you think you're Fred Astaire for a moment, and it's a great feeling, very satisfying. But there aren't very many people who do that anymore, and it's very hard to find a partner, and that music no longer really, the kind of rhythm, that sort of big band sound doesn't really exist all that much anymore. So that's a pretty vague situation. Cars, I guess I'm still slightly addicted in the sense that the car I have has a certain look to it, and I keep it polished and clean. Some people think a little obsessively so. I don't feel I'm not that involved anymore. But in fact, when I'm in my car with the sunroof back and looking out over the black hood, I like it to be shiny.
What kind of car is it?
It's a 1982 Eldorado, a black on black, which is sort of the last, in a way, to me, almost one of the last American hot rods. Everything else has become European in design, that sort of a flowing design. This still has a kind of hard edge to it, and I like that look, and I'm having a hard time replacing. The car's gotten 150,000 miles on it now, and I can't find anything to replace it with.
Thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Artist Robert Irwin. The Museum of Contemporary Art in Los Angeles recently organized a retrospective of his work. The catalog is published by Rizzoli. This is Fresh Air.